perhaps, you know, the world's greatest sporting precinct right in the shadows of the one of those cities.
I used to love the roar of the crowd.
Magnificent mark taken by Walcott there.
A fake kick is being advertised. He gets inside, well inside.
And anywhere that you can see, just with your grin. The skin can't skin. You're not where behind the chair.
Oh, Cochin, just a little bit of genius.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And we, Andy, are the 2017 Premiers.
It's a beautiful intro, Nick.
I don't know about you, but I've never cried in public outside of funerals quite the way I did this weekend. Like it, and yeah.
Well, if we want to have a cry in public, like, look, emotional, as I discovered, grand finals are really hard emotionally to deal with. Like, both the Geelong and GWS game were emotionally simpler, but, like, for large parts of the lead-up, I felt a bit numb. And what really hit me, Nick, I was flying into Melbourne early on Saturday morning, and the plane banked in low over Melbourne. I could see the G in the distance, and then I started to feel what was happening. Now, we'll talk a bit about what it was like for you as well. But it built and built during the day. But the first time it really released on me, Nick, was when Batch kicked the goal. You might recall that he kicked the goal. That goal, that snap around the corner he's left, that he put us in front in the first quarter. So we were up, I believe, 3 points at the time in the third quarter, in the first quarter. And
I hyperventilated at that point.
I was turning around to the people around me saying, Richmond are winning, are leading in a grand final. Richmond are winning in a grand final. And then obviously it was early days and I must have met a few people, and they were all rusted on Tigers, gave me strange looks, but it was just, oh my God, we're here and we're competing.
I had exactly the same reaction that, oh my God, we're in front in a grand final and I'm there watching it. Yeah, I literally hyperventilated at that moment.
Yeah, and we're not getting blown away and we're in it?
No, they didn't kick the first 15 goals in a row.
And by the way, I was just watching, before we came on air, I was just to pass the time, I was watching the first quarter again, as one does. And actually, Nick, maybe this is a good time to just bring in and introduce this show. This show won't be super analytical because we're going to do another one of our Commentate the Game shows, which will do a bit more analysis. So I've deliberately not watched the game too many times, so it keeps it a bit fresh when we do it.
You've kept it in single digits.
Yep. So exactly. So anyway, that'll be something that we'll do over the next weekend or so. And we got some good feedback on the last show we did. But just getting back to the game, Nick, I was just watching the replay, and by the time we hit the front, we were already winning. Like, the Richmond pattern had been established.
Yeah, I mean, obviously...
That's for the benefit of hindsight, but...
Yeah, the benefit of hindsight. I was very nervous, but I felt really good going into halftime. Like those two goals, really made me feel much better about the world than it had at the end of the first quarter. It was one of my nightmare scenarios was us being on top in general play, but Adelaide having a really high conversion rate because Adelaide have the best conversion rate in the AFL, so it really settled the nerves.
We were 8 points down in the second quarter when the rain came, and I remember distinctly thinking, I'd take that. If you said at the start of the game, when the rain comes, we're within a goal and a bit, I'd take that in a heartbeat because, you know, we are a better second half team, and as history has proven, but, you know, it's hard to make the case that, you know, from early on in the first quarter, we just dominated them. So, that's a pretty much a three-and-a-half quarter team. But we're getting off. We're on the start on the emotion of the day, Nick.
Look, I actually wanted to start on that. So I flew in on Friday morning, went to my first grand final parade, which was, yeah, it was kind of fun. Didn't change my life, but it was fun to do. I thought, you know, the body language doctor didn't really have too much to take away from it, other than I did have a slight moment of fear when I saw Sean Hampson and thought, he could play in a grand final without playing a single game of senior football all year if Nank gets hurt in the warm-up.
That would have been a dark thought. Were you not impressed? I was moved just watching the photos because I was still out of Melbourne. I was moved by the crowds and enthusiasm. Yeah. It just felt like Melbourne was the centre of the universe.
You literally couldn't walk down Spring Street. It was completely packed on either side because I was meeting a friend near Fitzroy Gardens, so I literally had to get the tram to Jollymont and walk back because you couldn't walk through otherwise. I was feeling pretty nervous at that stage, but fortunately had made the first of three trips to the All Nation Hotel for the weekend and had a few settling drinks. And you'll be pleased to know by the end of those drinks that we decided that Richmond was going to win not only on Saturday, but also the following five grand finals in a row.
That's very reassuring. Nick, I actually, just before the game, actually queuing for the beer queue, and it was very interesting to note at the MCG that essentially in the bit I was at, you had to wait 5 seconds to get food, but you had to wait about 20 minutes to get beer.
It was exactly the same. We were pretty much opposite ends of the ground. Yeah, exactly the same for me. And yeah, I stopped drinking during the game because I was worried I'd have to queue up too much and I'd miss some of the play.
I actually forced myself to eat a bit. Anyway, I saw Scott Turner, went over, said hello, had a chat to him. And I realised the last time I'd seen Scott Turner in person at the MCG was the 1990 final against Essendon. And as I motioned back to my seat, carrying my beer, I did this sort of think, 2017, Jack Dyer's number, Scotty Turner, adding together, it's a sign, we're going to win! I was pretty much looking for anything at that stage. But...
I know. Well, we had breakfast in Richmond, you know, that took the obligatory photo in front of the Dustin Martin mural, which has to be one of the greatest pop-up bits of marketing that have been done for a while.
Also, those who know, and probably a lot of our listeners who got it taken, and they get it taken by the people waiting behind them to take it. We got taken by the guy waiting behind us, who managed to exclude Dustin Martin from the picture in front of the Dustin Martin mural. Anyway, we'll always have those memories of us standing in front of the Dustin Martin mural together with Dusty's face half chopped out.
Look, I was, you know, going to a grand final for the first time as an adult. I was struck actually that the pre-match entertainment was actually quite entertaining. I didn't realise that was allowed.
Yeah. No, it was a sort of generic corporate package. Most of the pre-match entertainment went well. I thought it was great how the way that the MCG PA people had one job and managed to stuff up not playing the Richmond song as the team came out.
That wasn't
controversial. You know, it's not like there was some sort of visual clue that the team might climb out, like say drums beating or, a banner
giant
going
banner.
Or players running on the field. Anyway.
Did you think about Richmond when the Killers did the Midnight Oil cover? When they were talking about the desperate and divided years?
Actually, I may have been with Scott Turner in the BQ at that time.
Well, the only way that could have been more perfect for me was if he'd yelled out the name Mel Brown during that part of the lyrics.
Fair enough. And then, of course, the grand final, the anthem was quite controversial. where the Adelaide Crows appeared to all have jock itch because they all seemed to be standing like they're avoiding rubbing their thighs together.
Yeah. I didn't. It's the first time to see it in person for me. And yeah, I didn't find it. I thought our guys looked much better.
Yeah. Anyway, good for them. I think they've been backed about that for enough.
Fair enough. And when was there a particular moment when it all became a little bit too much?
Not really. I get most emotional when it's close. After the game, I just wanted to be alone. But I was getting more and more confident as the game went on because we just, you know, in this second half of the year, we've just so locked teams down. And actually, now that we're on the game, I just want to talk about it. You know, there's the ridiculous Grant Thomas comment, which we don't need to pay up. But, you know, for those who don't know, Grant Thomas said Richmond are the least talented team to win a grand final in a long time. You know, it's Grant Thomas, not to be taken too seriously. Although, if I could just say quickly, if I was Grant Thomas, I wouldn't be going there because arguably he coached one of the most talented teams not to win a grand final. And secondly, I'm quite fine with not being that talented. The reality is this team is good.
Yep.
It beat every other team in the top four. You can only beat who you play. And we beat every other team in the top four this year. And we beat them by an average of 45 points in the three games of the finals. Like, I would take a Stephen Bradbury grand final where every other team was crap and we got a bit of luck. But this was not that. We beat everyone in front of us, and this is a clear, definitive premiership. This game was slightly dull from a neutral's point of view. It wasn't dull for us, obviously. It was dull from a neutral's point of view, as was our last two games, because we just crushed our opposition.
Yeah. So we finished up with the best percentage of any finals team since the Essendon 2000 team. So if you were perhaps the biggest problem for Grant Thomas wasn't that, but you know, ESPN did some statistical rankings, and they had us as a below-average premiership team, but not by much. Like, we were...
We're comfortably in the middle of the pack.
Yeah, comfortably middle-of-the-pack team. Adelaide would have been a slightly above the middle of the pack. But that, you know, this particular configuration of the team that played the last five games of the season, like, that was clearly playing at a higher level, and the fact that Grant Thomas hasn't done his research to know about how well some of the lesser liked players is Grant Thomas's fault rather than ours.
And you know what, like I said, Nick, I take it as a compliment. You know, we'll talk about this more about in this podcast and future podcasts, but I freaking love that we got like good football out of people like Townsend and Jason Castagna. Like, these are guys who...
Nathan Broad. My God.
Played really good. It makes me proud.
Passed over four times in national draft. Not just once.
You know, a premiership is a premiership is a premiership. They're all great. And, you know, those even the premierships they say when they're a weak year in between eras... they're all great. They're all supported by their fans. But, you know, if this was won by a bunch of triers whose team spirit got them over the line and, you know, their togetherness and their ability to sacrifice for one another, well, you know, what is more Richmondy than that?
I know. Look, I'm so happy about so many things. Like, I cried for the first time just before three-quarter time when we got to about six goals in front. I was like, oh, my God, this is happening. Oh, my God, this is happening. And I couldn't quite cope there for a moment. When they flashed up the footage of Richo on the boundary line in tears, yep, cried then too.
You know, Nick, just on that Richo fight, you know, I've now seen the game replayed, obviously played live, but also replayed about four times at different pubs. And every time that footage of Richo comes up, there is a huge cheer in the pub. Like, it's the biggest cheer almost of the day.
I know. The contrast between having Roman Reigns heard present the Norm Smith and Richo presenting the Premiership Cup was quite the contrast for me.
Yeah, I felt a bit sorry for Hurd because clearly it was too early, but apparently there's some rotation system about how they do it. Yeah, but that Richo being able to present the cup was beautiful.
Such a even having Mick Malthouse up there, like I think that was nice to have someone there from that generation. Like,
yeah, you know, I love how he went out to give a respectful handshake to Dimmer, and he got a warm hug instead. Because, you know, I think Mick deserves a warm hug because Lord knows we've got a lot over the last...
There were so many people that deserved hugs. The Greek guy sitting down the row from me who was sobbing uncontrollably for the last 10 minutes of the last quarter, I gave him a hug on the way out.
Yeah. I remember just as I was leaving, because I stayed till the end like you did, but I was on the second level, so there weren't as many people there, and... sort of, it was an empty concourse, and I was just walking out, and a tiger guy about my age came walking the other way, and without a word being said, we just hugged completely. And I know we've all done this 50 times, but it was just a lonely, quiet moment, and nothing needed to be said. But yeah,
it was certainly more touching than the moment I had when waving my scarf in towards the end of the last quarter, I knocked the glass of beer out of the woman's hand to across from me. That was a bit awkward.
Yeah.
Although it very much pales into contrast from friend of the podcast, Paul, who told me his story about when he watched Dan Rioli's goal of the year in standing room at the G, and it was right in front of me. He did a giant fist bump afterwards, knocked over the woman standing next to him, who was then lying on the ground, holding her nose with blood coming out, and he was like, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry." And her boyfriend went, "It's okay, it was a really good goal."
Ah, yes. Yes.
I love Richmond supporters. I had so many random happy conversations with Richmond supporters.
Actually, one of my favourite things I learned on the weekend that I wasn't expecting, aside from two or three debates that almost all of us had, which we'll come to in a sec, but what I really liked was meeting people who'd flown from Singapore, from Indonesia, from Perth, just to go to be in Richmond, to go to the punt. They couldn't get tickets, but they just wanted to be around the neighbourhood. They wanted to be around other punt Richmond fans. I really like that. Like, I just, like, it's such a feeling of community.
Yeah. Oh. And that, I have to admit, I was a bit dubious of the guy we met who'd come from Colac, and he was wearing his 1982 grand final jumper. I would have put that one in the... in the fire quite some time ago as having bad juju, but seemingly we've washed away all of that.
Yeah, but now I'm sort of stuck with I borrowed a friend's scarf for the grand final. I'm sort of I've got to work out a way to buy him a replacement. It's not an easily replaceable scarf, so I'm gonna have to work on that.
Yeah, I know. So yeah, now I can't get rid of it. You know, I wore my old TAC-sponsored jumper, which is getting on in years, but nope, can't get rid of that thing now.
So, Nick, after the game, you've already mentioned the All Nations, but the reason we went there was because we went there after the Carlton game and Carlton final, we wanted to complete the circle, and it was great. We watched the replay, lots of hugs, lots of cheers, singing the song
Washed away the sins, yeah.
And, you know, we didn't go to Swan Street, but we had friends there, and they were friends... watching Jack sing with the Killers. But Nick, the favourite moment of me of the watch, like I said, I just wish I could hug people wearing yellow and black for the next 4 weeks, because that's how I feel. It hasn't worn off. The elation, it's not sort of, it wasn't a really high elation, just a relief and a numbness, and then just a happiness and a completeness. But my last thing, I had to fly out of Melbourne at 6 o'clock, and I met a few friends and a couple of new guys, dodgy guy called Ollie, who I never let on the podcast, but a few old friends like Damien, and I was at the London having a few beers, and I was really enjoying it. And Simon Wallace, actually. And just naming fans of the podcast because it's that kind of show. But every 10 minutes, people would spontaneously start singing the song. You know, no one was leading it. There was nothing pretentious or attention-seeking about it. Just people would start singing the song, and they'd break into words. They'd sing a rousing rendition, and then they'd wait 10, 15 minutes and do it again. And I have a video at work on Monday and Tuesday when people ask me how it was. I show them a video that a friend took of the people singing and saying, this is what it was like, you know, just ordinary people. Everyone
24 hours later. Yeah.
Sing. And I had to leave, unfortunately, but as I left, people were singing, starting another verse, and I thought, this is why I love Richmond. You know, the passion, the persistence, and just the love for the club.
I know. Well, we both went to Family Day, which was, you know, and the only problem with Family Day was the absence of any child size premiership memorabilia, you know, that you could buy. But otherwise, that was it. It was great. I did. And
I thought they could have honored Evie a bit in that.
They did. And look, they did a great job of that at the Jack Dyer last night.
They did.
But yeah, I did. Was it you who said that Basher had the smug look of a man whose all his friends are far more hungover than he is?
Yeah, the smug look of the one non-hungover person amongst his friends. And yeah, there was obviously some people there who at the very least were extremely hungover. But yeah, it was entertaining, it was good fun.
Look, I like one of the many, many things I enjoyed about the weekend was the really strong sense of team, like the reaction of the players who, the VFL guys, had missed out when they sprinted across the ground to hug the players. That was just great.
And the way Dusty brought them into the circle.
Yeah, to sing the song both after the game and again at Punt Road, that was fantastic. Frankly, you could say that Todd Elton got more screen time after the grand final than he did in several of his senior appearances this year.
But we should be grateful to Todd Elton, because had he been, this is going to be harsh, but had he been more adequate, we wouldn't have gone to this awesome forward lineup, which arguably won us the premiership. So, you know, but there is the swings and roundabouts to the Todd Elton story.
I know. Look, just sort of jumping around, one of the other things that, you know, one of the things that really struck me from the weekend is I had a palpable sense of having been wrong about a number of things. Like, you know, the weekend also had the sense of vindication, like that, you know, Nathan Broad doing a good job on Tom Lynch, which, you know, you have to be a pretty hardcore Richmond fan to have seen that as a possibility, but it wasn't that unlikely given his form, and it actually happened. But I was struck, having said about a month ago that Kane Lambert had had a good season, but you know, probably wasn't going to poll all that well in the BNF. Finished third. When I said that Jack Graham was too big an injury risk to play in the finals, yeah, that was really stupid. Pretty much everything I ever said about Liam McBean. And also the... I had always been of the opinion that, by and large, coaches are pretty fungible. But what I don't think I took enough into account is that I do think that's right most of the time, but there are moments when you just get this incredible synergy between the coach and the team comes together as a unit and they play for each other and they are greater than the sum of their parts. And that's exactly what we just witnessed.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think the coach is a multiplier on the team, and sometimes, you know, a good coach can be a bad coach in the wrong situation, and just sometimes it does click and it does work. And in this case, it did. Like the magic happened, with the assistance clearly, and you know, that we are now at risk of losing assistance because I know there's been a lot of stories about our...
Blake Caracella as late today was... AFL site was saying that they won't. The Suns were down to three and none of them were Blake Caracella.
There is rumours that he's in, though. But whatever. If it's not this year, it's... You know, people aren't stupid. You know, you can do all the stories about the team building stuff and the togetherness is great, but people are going to look at, you know, Richmond have won using a structure and a game plan that no one else has won before. They've done it in a way that was clearly not being planned for last year. It was something that came onto the scene this year. And people are going to look at and start picking apart the pieces and start picking apart, well, he's a great football mind, and, you know, maybe we can use him as well. And that's just the price of success. That's nothing to be afraid of, nothing to worry about. But yeah, this will happen. Anyway, Nick, back to the positive side. I just want to talk a bit about, a few of the sort of the common things that were the common drunken conversations that people have been having out of the game and in the podcast, frankly. Cause I don't want to overanalyze this game now because this game is so well analyzed. And frankly, the headline story, for once, the headline overly simplistic story is right. Our pressure was too much for them.
Yep.
Now, if you look, and I just make the point about the pressure, it's not that we apply pressure. Everyone applies for pressure. In fact, if early in the game, I think it was BT made the comment, Adelaide are turning Richmond's game on them. They're using so much pressure. Well, that was true. But it's not pressuring for 10 minutes. It's pressuring, hard pressure in the third quarter. Because footballers want to run. They want to break. And they don't get to do it against us. And it wasn't just the immediate pressure. We cover the switch so well. You know, if you're at the game, it was impossible to switch. You get the first kick out to sort of a mediocre ball user, and then you could see clearly that down the field there was nothing to kick to.
That Conrad Marshall, who's frankly the luckiest man in the world for having started writing a book about the Richmond 2016 season and wisely deciding that that would be as unreadable as that team was unwatchable, decided to do another year and cover 2017 as well. And now he's going to sell the mozzarella. But his Age article on the weekend saying among the many factors for Richmond winning was their defensive positioning. But, yeah, that same thing, that part of why the Adelaide players were so under pressure because they couldn't. There wasn't an easy first option for them. They'd look up, there was somebody who covered, and they had to think their way through the situation while having two or three guys sprinting at them, trying to take them to the ground. And you can look, the concept of a really high pressure game we've seen before, but you know,
it's the execution.
The execution and having a team that, you know, across the park, quite a lot of athleticism, quite a lot of speed. So you can attempt to replicate it, but hey, you've got to have the cattle to pull it off.
And the other thing is, offensively, we don't require perfect ball movement ourselves. Like, when it turns into a scrap, you know, you can clearly see it, but, you know, Townsend and Castagna, that they, when the ball's in the air, they play as defenders. And that's, you know, we're trying to create contest. We're trying to make it messy even our forward line because our players, we have players who can capitalize on that chaos. Anyway, we'll talk about that more in the grand final replay, but, I did want to talk, Nick, about firstly, the Norm Smith.
Yep.
Now, I know it's fun to debate, and, you know, I'd love to make a hipster contrarian argument that it was Hawley or Prestia or Graham.
Halfway through the third quarter, I would have given it to Hawley, actually, but Dusty was the right choice.
Yeah, so, like, he had, and I wouldn't even say that, look, at halftime, he had 17 contested possessions.
Yeah, that is a lot. Hawley did have a lot of... Hawley actually got the coach's votes ahead of Martin.
Yeah,
From both coaches. So he played a very good game. But that Dusty, yeah, he was sensational. He was
by far
the best midfielder.
Even Hawley's goal was set up by a brilliant bit of Dusty play. Look, and the thing about Dusty was he had, in the finish for the game, 22 contested possessions. He had 83 disposal efficiency. Now, just to explain that quickly, it's generally when you have high contested possessions, you have low disposal effectiveness because you're in the middle of packs.
Guys hanging off you.
Yep. And so, you know, for Dusty to go that well and also have a lot of meters gained, he had plenty of clearances, and he had the second highest score involvement.
Mm.
It was a supremely good game. Like, as much as the other were, and by the way, on the sort of the champion data rating and the AFL ranking, he was by far the best player.
Yeah. And I also loved how he, you know, we didn't see anything of either the Norm Smith or the Brownlow in the celebrations. He was just, wearing his premiership medal. Yeah, that was pretty nice.
Yeah, fair enough. What else stood about?
Well, he did have a moment as well. I think it was in the fourth quarter. We'll go through it when we watch the game. But there was a moment when somebody failed to centre the ball and Dusty told them off, and it was noticeable that that was almost the last selfish act we saw for the day. You know, whereas we saw, you know, as the game went on, we saw more and more of that sort of stuff from Adelaide like that. Yeah, for all the cliche of playing for each other and a team, they really did.
And look, just a couple of other moments I want to highlight, rather than going through individually, because like I said, we'll come back to it. There was a moment in the third that happened in front of me where Sloan and Hooley were one out, and Hooley knocked it forward, then sort of got a scramble kick away, gained 30 metres and forced the throw in, and I gave a standing ovation, because, you know, when Basher Hooley is beating arguably the second best contested ball player in the AFL. If he's not second best, he's top five, Roy Sloan. You know, he's beating him 1-8. You know you're bloody on. And the other moment is something we both noticed. There was about a 7-minute period in the second quarter where Greg rucked exclusively against Sam Jacobs. Now,
They had trouble getting Nank back on the ground, so it went longer than usual.
Yeah, so it's one thing to take one or two taps, but he had enough. Greg was exposed for multiple taps where Jacobs had time to think about it and, you know, either destroy Greg or really use his tap work. And they just couldn't effectively capitalize on that. They kept either Jacobs would tap to a hot Adelaide player and not capitalize, or they'd use it ineffectually because Jacobs couldn't grab it because Greg would have tackled him. And at the end of the game, we actually, not only did Nank get valuable 6-7 minute rest there, and we also tied that period of the game on the scoreboard. By the end of the game, we actually won the scores from stoppages. Like, these are the little things, the games within the game.
I know, and which is a real area of strength for Adelaide, and not something we're as good at, although we have been better at it during the finals, and part of that being the very solid contested work from Boy Wonder Jack Graham.
But great play by Grigor and magnificent coaching.
I know. Or even, you know, that Dan Rioli didn't hesitate to put his hand up to take a throw in against Sam Jacobs, who's literally 25 centimetres taller than he is.
Well, look, Sean Greig do it so successfully. What option did he have? I also want to pay credit to Townsend. My God, he's a dirty player, but I enjoy him watching him play.
Deeply so. And yet he was enough of an offensive weapon that they had to respect him as well.
Once again.
It was great. How do you feel about the criticisms of Don Pike's coaching?
Well, it's hard to be too harsh on him because exactly the same things happened to him as well. Cameron's an untested, but Chris Scott, an untested coach, you know, but Chris Scott's clearly a great coach. His team got shocked and crushed by the Tiger juggernaut as well. So, you know, how do you feel about it?
Well, I think you can be critical about individual moments that Dusty was left one out with Luke Brown, whereas they'd been trying to match him up with Kyle Hardigan, who is half a foot taller and 10 kilos heavier, whereas Luke Brown has made a name for himself by being a very stingy back pocket against small forwards. And the one The one part of his game that isn't very good is that he's not very good on one-on-one marking contests versus perhaps the AFL's, one of the AFL's best three contested marks like that. Ugh. That's not a good look.
No, absolutely. No, that was pretty, and they had a lot of guys back then, so why they didn't have a second out to, why they managed to let Dusty be one out with a guy who's physically outmatched, but also one out against anyone is clearly a bad idea. You know, he's playing for forward. How many full forwards get to play one out?
And we've seen this story. He's kicked 37 goals this year. He's very good at this. One comment after the game, and I deeply enjoyed Caroline Wilson's work about sort of perhaps capturing someone who was so close to the club during the glory years and how it made her feel like a child again. Actually, I had the thought that, God, people of our age, like we don't even have that. Like I was too young to understand what a premiership was. Like we have people with no living memory of a Richmond premiership who now have teenage children. Oh my God.
Yeah, but our children just live in a different world where Richmond are good. And we're not going to go through everyone this week, but Jack Graham, obviously, we have to talk about. We have to recount a story, a debate we're having at the pub before the game, where a mate of ours said, do you think we could get a top 15 pick off of Jack Graham?
Nope.
And I poo-pooed it for, you know, all the reasons that we can go through at a different time. Yeah, we laughed about it and we sort of debated it a while, but, you know, it was good. You know, there's one of those conversations. And it's fair to say by about, halfway through the third quarter that, Jack Graham's, value amongst us had probably gone up to top 10 pick. And I just noticed on Punt Road End, the fan website that there's currently a thread where they're asking, would you take pick one for Jack Graham? And most people seriously, like unironically, are saying, don't be stupid. Of course not.
I know. Well, we've mentioned before the questions against Graham were...
That's a rise of 52 draft spots in 1 year. That's good going.
He has just kicked the most goals in the grand final. And look, the questions on him were injuries, which, you know, to be fair, he has had some injuries this year, but the other one was his kicking. And he's kicked 3 goals from 45 metres. Without any problem at all.
His kicking's great. If you were to seriously analyse the question, it's the what with his body shape. How much more improvement does he have?
That was another question. But the kicking did come up a bit.
But I also led the team in pressure X.
Yeah, of course. So yeah, 5 games, no losses, average winning margin above 50 points.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. He didn't have a touch in the last quarter, Nick, so I'm a bit worried about him. He's a bit underperforming. Maybe we should consider him dropping in for round one.
Yeah. It is. He's now played as many finals as Richo did.
That's not necessarily good.
So, did you watch any of the Best and Fairest?
No, I'm actually overwhelmed with Tiger content.
Me too a bit.
I looked at the Scott, watched the Izzy testimonial, but I actually need some time to process it. Maybe I need to take a long walk by myself.
I did exactly the same thing. I haven't watched it. The only speech I watched was the UV speech because I really, that one was pretty close to home. Was as great as you would expect. But yeah, I haven't even calculated my normal votes per game. No, normally we do a whole show about the Jack Dyer, but because we are drowning in joy, I just don't have the emotional bandwidth for it.
Wait a minute, Nick. I can hear something. Oh my God, that's all you know, it's pretty music. And we're back, and we've been joined by world-famous kicking consultant and general Richmond man about town, Ollie Nguyen. Ollie, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. It's great to make my debut on such a glorious, glorious evening.
Look, it's a fantastic time for all Richmond supporters, and I think it was, you know, the people have already heard Hendy and I rubbish on, but we thought it'd be nice to hear another voice, and particularly someone else who was there at the front line of the celebrations.
So Ollie, we've known each other on, we've been bantering on the internet for a while, and we've known each other on Twitter as Ollie's moderately high-profile Richmond Twitter contributor, and we'd always been meaning to catch up for a beer before or after a game, and we finally did it on the Sunday after a grand final. And, you know, it was slightly awkward because we'd known each other for a long time, but we never met in person. And the very first thing that we did when we sat down, it took about 15 seconds, and then we started swapping Jacob Townsend stories, and the bond was instant.
As you did.
the bond. Well, he's a fellow redhead, so I have to kind of vouch for him every single time. Every single time that's possible, I can sort of pump him up. I do my best too. My love for Townsend started very, very early, and then disappeared for about 2 years. How long has he been on the list for? 2 years, and then it's just come back with an absolute flurry recently.
So Townsend apparently was planning his life after football 6 weeks ago. Like he was seriously thinking. Right, second club, hasn't worked. I need to think about what's next. Yeah.
So what I like about him is he's sneaky dirty. He's one of those guys that if he played in another club, you'd hate him. But you watch how he tackles. He leads with his head. You know, he knocked out the St Kilda captain a few weeks ago in a tackle that where his head was sort of dropped in position one, like an American football safety who's spearing. And I just like him because he's there, and you'd see that he was in the Crows player's head. But, Ollie, you noticed some quite interesting behaviour behind the play.
Yeah, I was very lucky to secure tickets for Saturday. So ours were behind the goals up pretty high. So we had a good view of Jacob's work. He was putting on the soon-to-be Melbourne Demon, Jake Lever. So what he was doing was, and it was beautiful to watch as a fellow undersized, scrappy defender, he was punching poor Jake Lever right above his elbow and his tricep in the exact same spot every 2 or 3 seconds when the umpire wasn't looking. And he hit him in the exact same arm, in his right arm, the entire probably second quarter. The umpire would walk over, and because obviously Lever started complaining about it, the umpire would walk over, and like a little kid who'd been caught stealing something, Townsend just like look away or bend down and do his shoe up. And hide behind Lever, look behind him, see the umpire had walked away, go back to just start punching him in the back of the arm the whole time. Every single time Lever, there'd be a contest, they'd get up. Lever would try and put his hands on his hips, just saw Townsend and put both his hands in between him, just push his hands out so Lever had half collapsed to the ground. Lever didn't get a second of rest the entire second quarter and third quarter when basically we went on our run and won the game. And it was just all thanks to Townsend, just knowing his limitations and knowing that basically being a pain in the ass is his second biggest attribute. So he certainly played up to that. It was beautiful to watch.
Fantastic.
I think it's very appropriate that Lever's going to Melbourne. I think culturally he'll fit the club very well.
Yeah, I agree. I couldn't agree more. I think he's easily shut out of big games, tends to play not well against Richmond, and he's physically intimidated, so he'll fit in perfectly well at the D's.
Yeah, I'm a bit worried. You know, one day that one of these rising teams like Melbourne will beat us, because one day we'll be a falling team where the other teams will be hunting. Well, actually, that one day is coming next year. So another thing we discussed, mate, is being the overdog. Are you psychologically ready for that?
I thought it would take me longer to turn into basically a smug idiot and just be think I'm better than everyone else because a bunch of strangers I know want a flag. But it was, you know, surprising to learn just how quickly it can happen. I've found that it's going to be just having that. Like, I know we spoke about it on Sunday, like, the logo on the jumper is going to be gold now. Like, little tiny things like that. You don't really ever picture it. Like, you don't ever think about Richmond. Like we were saying, the dream was this year to sneak into eighth and pinch an elimination final off someone who finished fifth.
Exactly. Some team we don't like. Yeah.
Yeah. I had grand visions of ruining Melbourne's year by beating them, you know, fifth v. eighth. Game at the MCG.
Actually, I would have celebrated that pretty hard.
Oh, for sure. Like that would have been amazing. Never in my wildest dreams did I think I'd end up walking down Swan Street just celebrating with 10,000 absolute strangers, everyone hugging and crying and going absolutely mental because we'd won the premiership.
So how was Swan Street? We went to the All Nations because of some historical links, but how was it?
I'll be a Swan Street correspondent. It was insane. So we stuck around for a little bit, caught up with about three or four mates, and then made our way down to Swan Street. And there was sort of rumblings as we were walking that they'd, you know, or maybe they'll shut down Swan Street, and like it's just groups of random saying this. You get about 200 metres away and you can just see the cop lights flashing, you can see the bollards put up, and then you just hear the noise. You hear trumpets, you hear cheering, everyone singing the song. And then when you got there, it was just absolute pandemonium. The lineups for the bottle shops, the lineups to get the dusty cards, people dancing on cars. I was lucky to be in there for the celebration part of it. Apparently it turned a little bit loose towards the end of the night where the cops were involved and stuff like that. But as we made our way through to the rising sun, it was just like genuinely something, if you were there, you'll never forget, because no other team has the fan base that we had, or have the history of just, you know, failing that we had, that just wanted to release like everyone did. That will never be seen again. So I was bloody lucky to be a part of it.
So, but no doubt, as things tend to do at the Rising Sun, they were pretty quiet after that, were they?
Oh, yeah, just had a couple of quiet beers with me and about, you know, 200 other Richmond supporters and one salty-ass Adelaide fan who just kept telling everyone to be quiet when they'd sing the song. So naturally, we'd made our way over to this poor person and just go, "Oh, waff," and then the whole pub would just start singing it again and she'd start looking salty. It was very mature and very amazing to be a part of.
So were there any other individual performances that stood out to you?
I assume you guys would have already mentioned it, but again, being the scrappy defender that I am, Alex Rance, just the respect I've noticed he got from the umpires. So I was unlucky enough to be in a bay of about 400 people, was my little brother and I, and 398 Adelaide supporters. So they were definitely letting us know any time Rance got away with something. But the respect he gets now from the umpires, purely because of how good of a defender they know he is, now he can push the early body contact and holding that most people don't get away with. Rance now gets away with that and then beyond. So he's able to make contact earlier to actually push people under the ball. So that's why it looks like everyone's screaming at Taylor Walker for not knowing what he's doing and being able to only go up with one hand. It's actually because Rance has moved his pivot point where he wanted to stand 3 metres further just because he's so strong and just gets away with so much contact. That was just... Like without him in that first half, we could be down 4 or 5 goals. Like he's first half, it's got to be the best 11 touch game you'll see in the grand final.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that undid him, as you said himself, actually, was there just wasn't enough supply in the second half.
He wasn't busy at all. Like he basically just set up, although I did love on game day when Basher Hooley said, he went around because we all love Rance and we all love Jack and we all love Richo because they show the emotion that we show during a game, the highs and the lows, and they wear their hearts on their sleeves. But Hooley went to Rance and just said, "Look, mate, set up here, set up there, but, you know, we've got the flag won, mate, enjoy it." And Rance basically told him to get stuffed and to stick to the structures and stick to where he was and wouldn't even allow himself 5 minutes of just pure joy in the ground because he was too scared of us blowing an 8-goal lead in the last 3 minutes.
But that sort of makes him like a fan, really.
It does. It makes him a Tiger. He's just a very, very attractive, well-paid fan.
So we don't need to go individually through the players, but when was the moment, when did you first cry?
Dusty's goal. I'm shocking with thinking of comebacks. I've been, as we all have, but I'm like, you know, doing stupid maths in my head, like, oh God, if they kick a goal every 14 seconds, you know, like we're going to be in real trouble here. We've got like 4.5 minutes left. I'm sure there's a fair few that do that as well. But Dusty's goal, Dusty's mark or whatever it was when he played on and snapped it, I collapsed to the ground. Little brother jumped on me. I jumped up and that was when I just absolutely lost it. That was the first outpouring. There was got pretty close when they'd show, as I'm sure it affected everyone, when they showed Richo on the bench. That was again, something I'll never forget. What about yourself?
I actually cried the first time when we hit the lead in early in the first quarter. We were there and we were alive. It's just like
that noise, like that was just raw. That just the noise that just came out of everyone when Bash, because there was moments we were like, I'm sure when Flossie fumbled, the ball goes through and Bess, and you were just like, oh God, are we going to lose by 14 goals on the grand final day?
Yeah, I haven't said this yet on the pod, but like when Vossi stuffed up like that, like Vossi, the most reliable player on our team.
Sticking his hands in the back line, like you're just like, oh, is this going to be one of those days? Like, are we just, and Bess, you were like, you know, he just extrapolated everything. You're like, oh, no, now Betts is off for a flyer. Like, Betts is on fire now. He's going to start dominating. But
flashbacks.
Flashbacks to poor Chris Newman trying to chase around Eddie Betts in a Carlton jersey and just getting absolutely destroyed.
Oh, my God, that's Steve Morris's music, you know.
Oh, no, the ghost of Stevie. Oh, well.
I saw he managed to get more votes. He got a surprising amount of votes in the Best and Fairest this year. He got two, which was more than...
Was that the Adelaide coach that gave him that for when they played them?
No, it's Best and Fairest vote, so it's Richmond coaches. So, you know, he still has the magic in the coaching box.
Oh, God, I know that Adelaide game. The two Adelaide games will just stick in my mind, mostly for Steve Morris. Just seeing the difference that happens when you are... have him in the team when you take him out of the team was incredible.
All right, mate. It's getting on, and I've lost Nick on the line.
Man down.
It's great to have you on the show. Is there any final thoughts about the grand final you want to leave us with?
Just how bloody good, hey? Like, you just go through random moments. So I live in Richmond, so there's houses everywhere that are painted yellow and black. You just have random moments. Like, I was washing the dishes like 20 minutes ago and just let out a couple of fist pumps, like, because I just remembered that Tigers won the flag. Like, it's just so stupid. Still doesn't, in a way, it's that dumb. They've got three papers sitting in there. I've watched the replay that it doesn't feel real. It doesn't sink in that, you know, we've actually won the flag. And next year we don't have to hear about anything about, you know, oh, we won't listen about Richmond until they win a final or anything like that. It's Richmond, the defending premiers. It's just the best.
It's like next year now I can look forward to football like it's fun. Like, it's not this bitter trial of human emotion that, you know...
You won't be as cynical. Like, you'll be a happier fan.
Yeah, and, like, it's going to take me years to be able to bag Dimmer again because, you know, this is...
Oh, God, he's going to get a 12-year contract, isn't he?
Well, you never know. I'm really worried about losing Blake, but that's the discussion for another time. Like, this is
it's cool.
This is one of the best coached and best, most unified teams. Like, we've already discussed the Grant Thomas comments, and that was stupid. But I take it as a compliment that this wasn't the most talented team. I'm so proud of this team. Like, as a Richmond supporter, this is everything that we've dreamed of.
It's harder to, if you're one of the least talented teams ever, and you still win the grand final, that always basically showing how incredible of an effort was. I'm not sure how that's a... I know what Grant Thomas is trying to do because that's his shtick and that's the only reason people listen to him. But like that, as you said, that's a compliment. That just shows how well coached and how well drilled and how well they can stick to what they're told to do with the supposed talent deficiency that I don't actually think exists.
Well said, Ollie. I'm Andy.
Excellent. I'm Ollie. Go Tigers.
And that was Ollie. Thank you very much for joining us. And I managed to get Nick back online because there was no way I was going to end this podcast without our traditional sign-off.
Well, I would argue that our traditional sign-off is normally saying something about how nervous and stressed we are about the game to come. But no, I think we can go with the other ending.
I'm Andy.
I'm Nick. We're Richmond Tiger Talk. And we are the 2017 Premiers.
I used to love the roar of the crowd.